This is Maria Rizaris presenting New Voices, a program which interviews brand new writers from all walks of life, deep in the throes of their writing projects. I will interview them, get them to read a sample of their work, then get a total stranger to critique them. So far in this series, we have dealt with death, with colour and gender issues, with mental health and social displacement. What about a rollicking good tale? One that is full of twisting threads of plot lines, imaginative torture methods, sinister females, hard-boiled cops, and ruthless villains. Yes, it's a detective novel. Peter Stankovic retired from a financing and audit career, but instead of leaning up against the bar, downing schooners, sat hunched over a desk and started knocking out novels, and what novels they are. Usually, when you sit around a group of people who are reading out their creative works, everyone listening takes on a studious pose, ready to take down notes. There are all sorts of things that you look for. The metaphors, the structure of the sentence, you know, how much of it is gliding through your mind, how much of it is jarring. No, not with Peter's work. Everyone just kicks back, crosses their arms, half closes their eyes, and goes along for the ride. A critiquer is the wonderful Joseph Farolo, who has a sterling IT and senior management career in high-profile organisations, and who also, in a type of early retirement, has started to do the things he enjoys, one of which is getting involved in the publishing industry as a beta reader. And I was a little wary about putting Peter's work in front of Joseph, since I knew that Joseph was quite highbrow in his tastes. However, as per usual, I did get a surprise. This time it was with the sheer boyish enthusiasm with which Joseph greeted Peter's work. Peter definitely reminds me of Clark Kent. There he is, looking conservative and mild-mannered, and then he starts reading. Well, a shape-shifting certainly does occur. Peter's works are unabashedly in gumshoe investigative stories with classic earthy characters driven by those Shakespearean motives of the human character. Jealousy, greed, passion, you know, and bigamy and embezzlement. They're just day-to-day fare. And the women who plague the male characters, it's just wonderful. Not politically correct. No, I think everyone has pointed that out to Peter. And yet none of us would stop reading what he's written. Is it prurience? Is it curiosity? Is it a yearning for that madman psychology that we know is just so wrong and yet so utterly enjoyable? I don't know. I feel a little bit embarrassed even just trying to explain it. But it was the sheer mesmeric nature with which madmen held us right in its grip. So here it is. Our very own madman, Peter Stankovic. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
And Peter, of all the groups that I attended, writing groups, and I attended three a week right, last year, you were the only detective writer. And it is a kind of ambitious type of writing to go into. So tell me a little bit about why you chose detective writing as a way of expressing yourself in words.
Well, I used to work in insurance. I've always been interested in stories and writing stories. And I came across quite a few interest scenarios or events in the course of that work. Although that was in finance as well as in audit, it always struck me when I was writing reports that there was no colour. It had to be bland and just factual. I thought if I could do this the way I wanted to, I would make it exciting and I would nail the people I wanted to nail. That drew me into writing, with the insurance company as a background, into a mad scenario of what I would do to some people. And from there, it evolved into crime. And I really enjoyed writing about crime. In real life, quite often, the perpetrator gets away. In my books, they never get away. Always something happens to them, whether it's justice or vigilante or accidents or whatever. I can construct that world the way I see fit.
The way you've explained it to me now is that you took real life and then you kind of twisted it, A, to make it more interesting, but also to be able to rectify injustices that you saw happening around you. But you were also a very good writer as well. So what is it that most impels you?
I've always liked reading and watching films. It occurred to me when I was working that why the hell am I doing this? I want to make up stories. With that in mind, I did dabble with expressing myself in writing over the years, but never got the opportunity because my career took up so much of my time. And then, unfortunately, I had a family. And
unfortunately.
You know, women came into my life and my whole ambition was destroyed.
I have to say, you know, women feature largely in your novel, so you should be kind of grateful that they came along to that colour.
Absolutely, yes, I am grateful. It's been a fascinating aspect of my life. I've used lots of anecdotes to show certain aspects of my trials and tribulations.
Yeah.
And it was just fun.
How do you sit down and map out one of your stories? Because they've got intricate plots. There are all sorts of subplots and characters coming in and out of the scenes. How do you sit down and work out what that next book is going to be?
I began, I think, by actually jotting down note details of characters. And I found that largely unsatisfactory because the plots I had always changed as a result of people in the book. So my latest one is free-flowing. In other words, I don't even know what's going to happen in the next chapter. And that's immensely satisfying because then I enjoy it in the sense that I'm actually a part of the mystery or finding out the mystery myself.
That's interesting because most of the male writers I've come across all plot and plan the whole book. You're the first one I've come across who does that whole free-flowing thing, which is what a lot of women actually do. You know, they don't know how it's going to end. They just start writing that story and the story leads them. Are you finding that a more interesting way of writing?
I do. I suppose it's also part of my interest in women. They are more complex when I have mates that I talk to. Quite often they stick to a subject. With women, I found I can talk to them about a variety of things and they're quite open to discussing more philosophical issues. Whether or not that's led me to writing the way I do, I don't know.
How do you sit down and write? Do you apportion a certain part of the day to writing, or is it something that just you get inspired and you have to sit down and write?
Yeah, okay. Last year was a bad year for me because broke up with my wife, found somebody else. The regular routine I had moved away. Starting off this year, I have a plan of writing every day. I used to use the morning after a cup of coffee to write. Now I'm finding I have to be more flexible because my life's becoming a little bit more, interesting, I guess.
I have to say that when I used to listen to you read to the group, very often they'd find your work amusing and intriguing at the same time. Is that humour something that you plant into it, or is it something that sort of happens just by the way?
Look, I haven't analysed it really, but in my life I also like to joke a lot, mislead people by saying the wrong thing, stirring them up to find out what they really think.
Yeah.
That's just the way I see life. I see life as being funny.
Well, it does work because you're dealing often with quite horrific scenes. Somebody's getting tortured or people are being chased across town. And at the same time, you know, you sort of or twist that tension by adding some very funny element that plays with their sense of expectation. So there is that surprise.
I love comedy and odd shows. I like satire and anything that has some comment about the world we live in and so much better if we used humour appeals to me.
What role do you think writing plays in your life now?
Okay, well, now that I am retired from my career, it's an important part. It provides me with real purpose. It also alleviates any concerns or things that might impact you, and I lose myself in my writing, I find. Mm.
Beautiful. Now, before I ask you to read a section of your work, would you have any advice for someone who's just starting out to write, who's always wanted to do it and is just now thinking, is this something that I'd like to do to be able to express myself?
You need to write. It helps if you like reading, but before you worry too much about having something to say or a story, just practice writing and see how it goes. And then if you come across an idea that you like, you've got some background in putting things together.
So push up those sleeves and just start banging out those words.
Just do it.
Yeah, wonderful. What are you going to read for us today?
Okay, you want some background on this?
Oh, yeah. Just very briefly, just let us know.
Okay, this is part of a novel which I've called The Bigamist.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a guy who finds himself getting into trouble because he has two wives, one in the United States and one in England. He's been foolish enough to borrow money to feed his gambling habit. He has to borrow from the wives' accounts. Then there's conflict because the wives eventually meet, but he also has to get away from the loan shark.
Your typical neighbourhood story.
Absolutely.
Okay, can't wait to hear it.
Okay, all right. Craig Miller was uncomfortable, sore and unhappy. He was bound, sat on a chair and blindfolded, hands cuffed in front of him, ankles tied by rope to the chair legs. He had no idea where he was. He'd been with Harry Bolton, he recalled, trying to hammer out a deal. Then suddenly, as he'd walked along the footpath, huddled in his overcoat and using the umbrella he'd borrowed from Harry, he was attacked. He was punched in the stomach and then pushed and pulled by two men into the back of a van. Before he could recover, the men had climbed inside, held him down, then one man jabbed him with a hypodermic needle. Why? Miller tried to think about the attack. Neither man had spoken. Now his memory returned. He had no idea why he'd been captured and treated so badly. Surely nobody knew about his dealings with clients, some of whom had invested substantial sums of money with his firm. He had been a successful scammer, raking in millions. Who knew he was coming to Germany? He had no German clients. There was an odd smell in the room and the temperature was warm. He was thirsty, yet he hadn't been offered a drink. He wanted water. Miller finally gathered the courage to speak. "Hello, can I have some water, please?" He had to engage his captors in conversation to discover why he was here. Spider was back. He walked into his apartment and nodded at Hans, who was slouched on the sofa, watching television. Spider was accompanied by another man, an associate of Jansen's, who nodded at Hans. "Where's Joseph?" "He left after we secured the captive. Said he had things to do," said Hans. Spider's companion said he too needed to go. After shaking hands with Spider, he left. Turning back to Hans, Spider said, "Okay, so Bolton is in the room with the spiders?" "Yes. He's blindfolded, so he doesn't know." "Excellent. I want to see the expression on his face when I remove the blindfold." Spider went to the fridge and took out a bottle of water. He was parched, watching and waiting. And to no avail, as the target was in another hotel. Hans had communicated with him more than once that the captive was in the van. "Want a beer?" "No," said Hans, "I've had coffee. That's all I want for now." After Spider finished his beer, he asked Hans to accompany him as he went to the room which held the spiders and the captive. When he opened the door to the basement, he led the way. The pair walked down 15 steps to reach another door. Spider opened this door with a key. He marvelled at the room again, as he frequently did. It was cavernous, but clean, as Spider attended to the maintenance frequently. The room displayed many cases, each with a different breed of spider. As a collector, Spider had travelled extensively to satisfy his needs. At the end of the brightly lit room, Spider saw the man cuffed and blindfolded. He strode down a passageway between tables holding cages and transparent cases until he arrived in front of the captive. Harry Bolton was going to be in for a surprise. But it was not to be. Spider gulped when he removed the blindfold. "Who is this?" Spider asked his startled captive and an equally startled Hans. "My name is Craig Miller," said Miller, who looked aghast at Spider and then beyond. "What is this? Where am I?" Spider turned to Hans. "Where is Bolton?" He looked like Bolton. He had the same umbrella as the one he used briefly to talk to a taxi driver. Spider, annoyed at Hans, was about to berate him when something else came to mind. He turned back to Miller. "What were you doing with his umbrella?" "I was doing business with him," said Miller. "Look, can I have some water?" "Hans, get the man a glass of water," said Spider, wondering how he could take advantage of this situation. When Hans had gone, Spider scrutinised Miller, who was still wearing a suit, but it was clear that he was very uncomfortable as the room was warm. "What kind of business were you conducting with Bolton?" "What is that to you?" Do you see the spiders in front of you? I'll choose one to nibble on you if you are going to play hard to get. Spider smiled when he witnessed the raw fear on the man's face. I'm just a broker and we were discussing an investment proposition, that's all. For how much? $100,000 US, roundabouts. Miller began to perspire profusely. All right. That's how much he owes me, said Spider. How was he going to pay? Bank transfer, said Miller. Hands returned, and Spider said, open your mouth. Hands will pour it down. Can't you uncuff me? No, unless you want to play with one of my buddies, said Spider. Please, don't. I hate spiders. They scare me, said Miller, visibly shaking. He opened his mouth for Hands to pour water into it, which Hands did. Okay, Craig, I have a proposition for you. If you cooperate, I'll let you go. Sure, anything, said Miller. Some water trickled down his chin. I want you to call Bolton and give him another account number. Then when the funds appear, I'll let you go, okay? I'm not sure I can do that. He may already have transferred the money. Really? Well, let me introduce some of my pals, said Spider. He walked along the passageway to around the centre of the room, pressed a button to raise the clear box-like container, and had a light shone on it. Inside was a spider which crawled around the space. He turned and addressed Miller. This here is a fringed ornamental tarantula. It's a big hairy spider, as you can see, and unlike different tarantulas, causes excruciating pain and can cause extreme muscle cramping in some cases. Spider watched Miller's face. He noted that the captive's face turned whiter than the pale face it was originally. Spider showed him the next spider. This one is called the Sydney Funnel Web Spider. Isn't it a beauty? This guy is aggressive and charges. It delivers a volley of bites whilst clinging to its victim. It also has the most impressive fangs of any spider. It can bite through shoe leather and fingernails. You will die unless, within 15 minutes, an anti-venom is administered. My personal favourite. Spider glanced at Miller, who seemed ready to faint. I'll show you one more, Mr. Miller. Spider came closer to the captive and raised another container. The spider was brown, not the black colour of the Sydney funnel web. This one is called a Brazilian wandering spider. This is the world's most venomous spider, capable of injecting a neurotoxin 20 times more deadly than the black widow spider. This leads to loss of muscle control and therefore breathing problems, resulting to complete respiratory paralysis and eventually asphyxiation. And for males, there is a 4-hour hard-on, a painful erection before death. Miller couldn't look worse if he was told he had terminal cancer. What do you say? Asked Spider, advancing to where Miller was sitting. Okay, I'll do anything I can. I'm pretty sure he'll go for it. I am good at my job. Good to hear, said Spider. Hands will release you and set you up upstairs with a phone. He'll listen in. If you call somebody except Bolton, you will be fed to the spiders. Got it? Miller nodded.
And that was Peter Stankovich reading from his intriguing detective novel. And now to critique Peter is Joseph Furolo. Welcome to the studio, Joseph.
Thank you, Maria.
Now, Joseph, can you tell me a little bit about your background and how armed you come to this interview?
I suppose my main qualification is I'm an avid reader, and I've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to act as a beta reader for some published authors.
Can you tell us exactly what a beta reader is?
Okay, that I get to read the manuscript, to read it for a sense of integrity and completeness and just giving honest reader reaction.
Because this is very different from an Amanda Hampson novel.
No, it is, but it was fun right from the start. I must say, as soon as I heard the story, and it was fun, it was engaging, and my interest was piqued from very early on.
You know, it's this funny thing about detective novels. Some people see it as the mystery. They see somebody like Agatha Christie, for instance, as being the arch mystery writer. But then there are simply detective novel, action-based, and there's no profound elements. It provides you with a series of characters that you immediately relate to.
And there was a lot of nice touches to it. A case of mistaken identity, a whole series of events. You get the impression that Spider is someone very dedicated to balancing something out. But somehow or other, that all went awry. But nonetheless, the project continues. and that's quite refreshing, you know. It's and maybe a bit Australian in a way too, where there's just a bit of dumb luck or dumb bad luck.
Yeah, yeah.
Wrong umbrella and you get bundled into the van and sent off to the spider
den. There's a sort of like this sense of innocence for our protagonist,
yes.
You know, that he's suddenly caught in this spider's web, so to speak.
And he's got some deceit and some things that he's maybe... Have I been found out?
Yes, I know. I mean, I love Peter's description that it's a bigamist. I have heard a little bit more of this story, and bigamy element of it, there is that sense of innocence of how did I get myself into it? Well, I don't know. Like, you know, bigamy, it's not something you just accidentally step into, but in the context of the novel, somehow it's believable. It is almost theatrical in a way.
That makes some sort of likability of the character, and maybe with Peccadillo. So I don't know the full story, but I mean, it does remind me of another Australian writer, Robert G. Barrett, and the protagonist there is a bit of a tough boy, but with a big heart, and he ends up meeting some really weird characters, a bit like Spider and others.
Oh, absolutely. There was also this thing about the spiders themselves being used as instruments of torture. And obviously Peter's done a lot of research on spiders, so that got those layers of believability. Also, as a reader, you're finding out things about spiders that you didn't know before.
Well, that's true. I mean, it struck me as scientific. I love Craig, fascinated by Spider as a person because of all this effort and this obsession. Yeah. Very detached in the way he describes the different venom, detached, fanatical. It wasn't flummoxed. He didn't go and, you know, sack hands.
Well, it reminds me of something that Stephen King once wrote. People love hearing about things that is told to them by an expert and trade secrets almost. So in this circumstance, we're learning the trade secrets of a...
A spider torturer.
A person who uses spiders as a torture implement.
It was great. And feel for Craig. And you see this disparity between what Spider's planning and Craig's own circumstances. I must confess to being a bit of a Tolkien fan. I love Tolkien and the creativity that he has. He's a bit like Peter, where Tolkien would start and the characters and the words would reveal the story and you wouldn't know where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter's written a few novels. He says this is the first one that he's written in free form. That is, that he's not constructed so that he knows what the end is at the beginning and he's just letting it flow. What do you think of that?
I like that, and I think it does show a sign of development, but something that unfolds tells me that's maybe a little bit more interior and there's a personal journey as well, letting go and surrender, and I think that's an interesting part of the creative process.
Yeah. What an interesting observation, Joseph, because it just occurs to me now, you've just listened to the interview ourselves, that it happened at a critical point in Peter's life.
That's true.
You know, where he says that, you know, one relationship ended, another kind of life then ensued with a new partner, and now his life is less structured because he's also retired. So before, I suppose, when he was working and in a more a long-term relationship, he was more organised and he needed to have the books organised, I'm guessing. But now his life is less structured, more surprising, as he says, he's got a much more free-flowing form.
It makes sense what you're saying. I think your personal circumstances change everything. Everything from your desire to write, what you think you can write, to the reason you write. And I have read biographies of some great writers, even in the speculative field, like, for example, St. Thomas's Aquinas, who was a great mind.
Yes, yes.
But he stopped writing in the last 3 years of his life because he said, oh, I've been there, but I've done that. Well, maybe if he had it written a bit open-ended, he'd still be writing.
Possibly. Look, I'm a firm believer that once you actually start on a large body of work, you're not the same person that you were. Kind of journey that does pare you down. I've read some of Peter's work from earlier on. This, I think, is much more fun. it's much more engaging. It's better as a writer. I mean, I think we all get better as writers as we progress. His work seems to flow. The joy of the writing of it seems to be coming through.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that, because it's a bit like the experience of the writers' group. You know, everyone's in their own little world, but you come together and things are different. And in a sense, opening up and surrendering to a free flow is a similar thing of where you open yourself up to yeah. others and to life, and you step back. And there is a humility, and you discover you're not in complete control, so you might as well let things happen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. What is the audience that you think would appeal to this?
Again, I think Australians would love it. It was recognisably fresh and candid and unpretentious.
Yes.
But it's just interesting. It's well-written. It was informative. It kept you engaged. You weren't overawed by...
So, do you think men... Australian
I definitely, yes, I would say that. Australian yeah. men would read it.
Yeah. So would you read the whole book?
I would. I was engaged right from the beginning, and it built.
Yeah. You know what's interesting yeah. with Peter? Really, it was less than 8 minutes or something that he read out, and yet there was a story arc. Yeah. It was very nice to be able to have that little journey and be able to yeah. listen and get entertained even just by that little snippet.
And I had the sense that Craig was going to work something out. He
yes,
was going to survive.
Definitely.
And he was going to work something out, and I was curious to know what it was.
Yeah, and that's it. I was going to mention that good structure of the writing. If your grammar is bad, if it's the simple blocks, building blocks of writing are not perfect, then you, as a reader or as a listener, it jars with you, and all of a sudden you lose the flow. So his English is actually perfect, I suppose, of his background in report writing, which, as you said, was very dry and boring, but obviously had to be meticulous in order to be able to present a case.
Even understated in some ways.
Yes, yeah. Pithily. Mm. So he's got that sense of restraint about it, but then all the lusciousness of the imagination that's overlaid. So interesting that his background is very useful, even though he decries it.
I think that's true. And that's something I'm learning too, that different professions, your ability to appreciate and to write, for example, lawyers, I never thought that would ever give you a license for writing.
Remember, we listened to a barrister talk about writing, and when she was critiquing part of our group and was saying, well, yes, I listen to story making all the time. It's called an affidavit. And I have to sort of pick holes in the plot.
Yeah, barristers, that blew me away. And again, even people in blue collar, if you like, working with their hands, sometimes you hear stories and the way they express themselves.
Yeah.
It's just so forceful and free. And
well, David, a writer from last week, he says it's his writing style and his writing's got nothing to do with his work. But in fact, I think the exactitude of his observation, I mean, he's such an observer, all the tiny little details, you know, and then be able to recall them. I think that's got a lot to do with fine art.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's well worth a study. I think there's a PhD in
I think there's a PhD in that, which I'm not going to do.
Let's leave it to someone else.
Leave that one to somebody else.
Thank you, Maria.
Joseph. This is Maria Rosaris, and it was a pleasure to bring you this program, produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH with the support and inspiration of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. I look forward to your company next time.